Alright, so we're holding in the halachas of Bosses. I want to finish up some of the applications we left off with in Hilchos Bosses, and then we'll finish up with some indirect movement of Muksa, and then we'll quickly summarize everything that we learned in the last 10 minutes.
Sure.
Just check if you're still there. Okay. Alright, so we last left off on the bottom of page 8. The procedures for a non-bosses when muksa is on it. So where we're holding is, some muksa item has been placed on top of another item, but because of the requirements of establishing the concept of a bosses, the bottom item does not become a bosses for various number of reasons. Either because you put it there inadvertently, you didn't mean to specifically leave it there, it fell there, somebody else put it there, or you have two items on it, one which is mutter, one which is aser. All of those reasons which, at the end of the day, when we look at the item, when we say, this is not considered a bosses. Example, halacha l'maisa, last week, I told this over to Mrs. Schwartz, I think it was, Motzei Shabbos, so on Shabbos afternoon, we didn't eat at home Friday night, nor did we eat at home Shabbos lunch. So, when you know you're not eating at home, so the cleanup of the kitchen, Erev Shabbos, is a little bit less rigorous than usual, because you know you're not going to be home at all. So it turns out my wife's pocketbook was left on the chair. Just sitting on the chair, the kitchen table. So it so happened that even though we weren't home for lunch for Friday night or for lunch, we were hosting a Shalosh Shudas for a number of women for the Sodia Torah. So someone had called my wife on her cell phone sometime before Shabbos, and the way that her phone is programmed is it beeps when you have a message waiting for you until you turn it off. So we get home from Shabbos lunch, and sure enough, there's this beeping phone on the kitchen table, on the chair, in a pocketbook, and my wife says, can I move that out of here? I said, oh boy. So what are the issues? Let's work it through. So what's the status of the pocketbook? There's a phone clearly in there, that's for sure. So what's the status of the cell phone? Klishim lachto list. The cell phone is a phone whose primary usage is for a davar ha'asur, so something which is prohibited. It's not going to have the exalted status of a machmas kisaron kiss, a financial loss, because her cell phone is used, you know, it gets thrown around. So it's a klishim lachto list. So the cell phone itself would make the pocketbook a bosses, because the cell phone was definitely put in the pocketbook, it was left there. There's no reason to move it there from before shot. This is where you keep a cell phone, it goes in the pocketbook. So it technically should have made the pocketbook into a bosses because it's left there. It's not like I forgot to take it out before Shabbos. If she would have remembered before Shabbos, she just would have moved the whole pocketbook into a closet. But she had no reason to take the cell phone out. So according to all procedures, this pocketbook should become a bosses for the seller. Now what would we have to allow the pocketbook not to become a bosses? Okay, so we have a couple of things. So we could either say tzarach mekomo, if I needed the place, or if I needed the bag itself. So I didn't need. So can we use that to move the pocketbook? Do we need? Did I need the chair and the kitchen table? So the answer was no. It was just disturbing the shalosh shudas, which was taking place in the dining room, to have a beeping phone going off. But nobody needed the chair at the kitchen table. No one was planning on sitting at the chair at the kitchen table. All the food was being set. That's not going to help. So what else do we have at our disposal? There's something else in the bag that you need that would then give the bag a status of a bosses for both something which is permitted and for something which is prohibited. And if the thing which is permitted is more valuable to you than that which is prohibited, then the entire bag would take on a status, would not become a bosses. So I looked in the bag and I saw a brush. I skipped a step before you got here. I looked in the bag and I saw a wallet as well, obviously, in the bag, besides just the phone. What status of muksa does a wallet have? Her little pocketbook. It's worse, because the wallet has money and credit cards. And that's worse than klishim lachto list. That's muksa machmas gufa. There's nothing you can do with the credit card or a driver's license or the money. So therefore, the pocketbook was a bosses not only for the phone, which would have given me reason to move it if I would have needed the place, which I didn't, but it really became a bosses for the higher level muksa machmas gufo, because the wallet is far more valuable. That was the first question I asked. I said, what's more valuable to you? So now I have a wallet and I have a mouse. So I said, what's more valuable to you, your wallet or your phone? So she said, my wallet. for sure, it's got a credit card, a pocketbook, the money and driver's license is far more valuable than a phone. Okay, so that makes the whole bag now a bus is really for...
Not just the bag, just which of the wallet. The wallet...
Yeah, that's fine.
So it makes it okay because it's sitting inside in seconds?
So, remember, it keeps going. In other words, not only is the pocketbook a basis for the money inside the wallet, the chair is a basis for the pocketbook, which is a basis for the money which is inside of it.
Okay. You say you look inside the bag. Now, the bags that I use, always I zip the top. I have to unzip the top. To get inside. Is your wife's like that?
No, it was open. Yeah, it was open.
Without touching the
yeah.
But could you touch it to unzip?
You can't really move it. If unzipping it would cause it to move, no, I don't think so.
Well, the zipper itself
would be. Yeah, I would be hesitant to do that. So then I looked inside and I saw a brush. I said, oh, remember Moshe had a major, major leniency last week. He said if it's a permissible item and a forbidden item, we don't look at financial value. We look at, first of all, can one be used on Shabbos and one not be? If you need something on Shabbos, it automatically makes it more valuable than the item which cannot be used on Shabbos. So I saw that. But that doesn't mean that you can use it. It means that you need it on Shabbos. If you needed the article of clothing, or you needed the brush, or you needed your sunglasses, if you didn't need it, then it doesn't help you. So I say, so do you need your brush at all for Shabbos? You know, it was only 2 hours left of Shabbos. This was already 4 o'clock when we got home from shul. Mm-hmm. So she says, no, I have another brush downstairs. Right, I wasn't sure about that. I think it was. It looked like it would have been. Like for a sheitel, it would have been fine. It looked to me, assuming it was, but even that wasn't going to help because the wallet was more valuable than this, but the bus was for it. And then the brush wasn't going to help you because you didn't need it. So you're not going to need it. So I said, I think you're stuck. I don't think we can move this pocketbook on Shabbos because the pocketbook has become a basis both for the cell phone and for the wallet, both of them. And both of them, because they were left there on purpose, that's where you wanted them to be, in the bag. Now the chair, I don't think would be a basis for the pocketbook. This is where we'll talk about, if we hopefully we'll get to Mirz Hashem, at the end of today's discussion. I don't think the chair should have become a basis for the pocketbook. In other words, the phone is in the pocketbook, and the wallet's in the pocketbook, therefore the pocketbook is the carrier of the two items, which you keep in a pocketbook. That's why you wanted it there. That's where you do it. If you would have remembered before Shabbos, you wouldn't have taken those items out of the bag, you just would have moved the bag away. But the bag sitting on the chair, did we put the bag on the chair? Now, how'd the bag end up on the chair? An Erev Shabbos at 2 o'clock when we walked in the house, she dropped her bag off and started working in the kitchen or working with the kids, whatever. And if we would have remembered, no, there's no intent. That's not where it's kept normally and just happened to have been there. So technically speaking, even though the bag was a basis for the items inside of it, I don't think the chair should have become a basis for the bag. Which means, that's going to be important, we'll see later on today, that the chair is okay to be moved. We just have a muksa item on top of it, in this case the entire bag. So we'll see what I technically could have done. If you could hold off until we get there. I know, it's just so exciting. See, most people think halacha is dry and it's boring. It's not. It's just so exciting. It's jumping out of your seat excited. Yeah.
Do we think one of them is a bus, and you need the
place?
You can move the
buses? No. Because unless it's a bus is for only a klisha malach dole iser, then you couldn't move that item itself if you needed its place. You don't need any special leniency. If we would have been sitting around the kitchen table so that we needed the chairs, then I would have to say, well, now is it a basis for a wallet or for a phone? If it would have been a basis for the phone, I could have taken the phone out and moved it because I need its place. But the wallet, I can't do that for. The wallet has the higher level muksa status of muksa machmas gufa. It's inherently muksa, not just because it's sometimes used for forbidden things. There's nothing I could do with the money or the credit cards or the driver's license.
But would you indulge me just a minute, like the thing that I brought up to you, the thing that you had left, was that my purse fell down from the shelf in where I normally put in my closet. So it was right in front of the clothes and all. So I wasn't sure if I can move the cursor around. I was able to reach over and get the plug.
We'll talk about some ways in which you can kick it. We'll get
to
some.
Okay,
let's finish with the Vatis, not letter H, and then we'll do the most important thing, which we must make time for, which is on page 10, which are the leniency that you have to move it. Okay, so letter H, we get down to letter I, really. We said the tilting. Now, the first thing you can do, so again, in a situation in which you have something which has not become a Vatis, let's talk about our chair, for example. So now I have a chair with a pocketbook on top. So we established that the pocketbook has become a basis for the wallet and the phone, but the chair that it's placed on is not a basis. So that the pocketbook is muksa, but the chair is not muksa. I'm allowed to, if I needed the chair for something, I now have an item, which is what we're talking about here, a mutter item, which is not muksa, which has a muksa item on top of it. How do I handle that situation? I found money in a coat pocket, in a way that the money was left there accidentally. So my coat is mutter. The money isn't going to make the coat into a basis because I didn't put the money there on purpose. And you can't make a basis unless you intentionally put it. So what do I do with a coat that has money in it? What do I do with a chair that has a pocketbook on it? So, 8, 9. So the first thing to do is, the best thing to do is, if you can, is just to tilt it over. If you can tilt the muksa item off, so then your non-basis item is good to go. Now, let me just clarify this. In the case of the pocketbook, even if I could tilt out the phone and the wallet, I still can't move the pocketbook because the pocketbook has been established as a basis. In distinction to the chair, which was not established as a basis because the pocketbook was put there accidentally or inadvertently on Erev Shabbos, if I could get the pocketbook off and I need to move it, I can move the chair wherever I want. The chair does not establish itself as muksa. Is that clear, the distinction? So the best thing to do, if I were to have needed the chair, I tilt off the muksa item, I tilt off the money from my pillow, and I then take the item. Now the reason why I do that is not because I'm required to do that. It's because we try our best not to move muksa items when we don't have to. Because it's not a basis, and I'm not directly moving the muksa. So technically speaking, I should be allowed to just pick up the chair with the muksa item on it. Technically speaking, it's not a problem. Ideally, if what I need is the chair, I should tilt it off in order to not have to be moving a muksa item. But that's only just because that's the best way that we try to do things. But if you can't, you have a key ring, for example, which has different ignition keys on it, plus a house key. So we said last week, what establishes the status of the entirety of the ring? So your house key, which you need on Shabbos, is going to be much more important to you than the ignition key, even though maybe it isn't. On Shabbos, as far as these halachos goes, it will be. Therefore, your key ring is not deemed as a muksa item. So ideally, if you could tip off the ignition key, that would be great. Obviously, you can't do that. Therefore, the key ring is not considered muksa on Shabbos. Okay.
When you tilt the chair, you get the first off of the chair, that's what you're doing there.
Right.
What happens when you're tilting the chair, everything from the first
one will go flying. Oh, so that was letter B, which we briefly touched on last week on the top of page 9. So if you can't do that, because it will either cause damage to the surrounding area, or just will ruin everything, and you can't, that's not going to help my situation to dump the stuff all over the floor, so then you would just move the entirety of the chair in order to move the muksa item off. Or to move it away.
If it didn't spill out, could you take it with your foot?
We'll get to that. So technically speaking, I'm realizing this now, I stopped one step too short on Shabbos. I stopped when I determined that the bag was a basis. And I said, oh, so we're stuck. But because this is why you keep learning and you go over and you go over and you go over. If I would have taken the next step, I should have said, but the chair that the pocketbook is on is not a basis, and I could therefore pick up the chair and move that to a different room, or I could tilt off the pocketbook there, but that would have made a big mess. That would have been fine, because moving the chair was, as we'll learn in letter, that should have been 8, in page top of page 10, just if you want to make a note of that. So that should have been a 9. It's section 9, I have it as section 4, it should be an IX. But in any case, we'll learn in section 9, on the top of page 10, an indirect movement would have been okay. So I really stopped too short. You could have picked up the entirety of the chair and moved the chair without moving the muksa. We'll get to that. So I would have moved it to the bedroom. I would have moved it.
Would that mean, because the whole reason you're moved, because the noise is disturbing you, is it still, you'd be allowed to chatzil that to move the whole chair around.
Okay, the truth is, right, we're not, really, we're going to keep going. We're going to get to that last section. We'll see that it might not be so simple. You're right. In other words, it's correct that the chair is not a basis, which means that if I needed the chair, then I could have done that. So in other words, if she would have said, I don't have enough chairs in the dining room, I need a kitchen chair, I still would have to need, I still should have taken another one. If I needed that chair, then, for, let's go step by step, then for sure, I have a chair that I need, it's not a buses, I have a mux item on top, I could pick up the chair, move it to another room, dump the pocketbook wherever I would want, and then I have my charity.
What if she might need the chair? You don't know how many
customers
get the premise.
Right, if it's valid, just be honest with yourself. If you're honest with yourself, it's really a fair thing, and you need it. In other words, when you're setting up your house, if you were to have that chair available, would you bring it into the dining room because you need it? Yeah, I want to have it available. If we happen to know there's going to be a small crowd, I...
You verbally stated this is a bus system. You're allowed to refute your own answer.
After Shabbos starts, no. I don't know why. Why would you verbally state?
Because you said that in the beginning this is a bus system. I cannot move anything. That was your first thought. If you stated that.
Oh no, that doesn't matter. No, that's just because I'm working through my mind. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. No. Okay, applications. So pockets. We started talking a little bit about this. There are two types of pockets. I want to talk about pockets and drawers. These are the situations which come up all the time. There are two categories of each, both by pockets and by drawers. We'll work them through. Now remember again, each step of the way we need to take, starting from the muksa item, where is that muksa item resting? Where is that item resting? And where is that if it still needs to go further? So in the case of a pocket, we'll start with. So there are two types of pockets we mentioned. Number one is the pocket of a shirt, which is attached a separate piece of cloth, attached on three sides. That in halacha becomes part of the shirt. It is its own, it's just part, it's all one big thing. You have pockets like, well this is actually different. Then you have a pocket like this, which is a separate piece of cloth which is attached only at the top and sort of hangs or drags separate from the garment. I assume in women's clothing it's the same thing. You have two different types. Sometimes jacket pockets. You have pockets in a big jacket or, you know, other thing where it's sewn on, like this, you know, which is, and then you have the separate things which are separate little pockets. Okay, it's clear? Different types? Good. I'm going to go home. My pocket's going to be out of work. I'm going to think, where were you? Yeah, make sure I put everything, put myself back together here. Okay. So, in pocket number one, the type which is completely attached to the garment, meaning it is sewn to the cloth on all three sides, that is considered part of the main primary body of the apparel. It's just, it's part of the shirt. It's all considered one unit or entity. What's the significance of that? Therefore, a muksa item there would render the entire garment a bosis, because it's all considered one unit. It's part of the shirt. So if you had purposely placed a cell phone in your shirt pocket, say, or you placed wallet in a pocket, that type of a pallet, money, pocket, money, or whatever you placed in there, because that's where you wanted it to be, that will then make the entire shirt a bosis. Now, of course, that assumes all of the requirements for Hilchos Bosis, as we mentioned, that you did it there on purpose, and it's a muksa. So therefore, in that situation which it was intentionally placed there, so now your shirt is a bosis and you could not move your shirt or pants, whatever it is. Now I need it, it's in the way, it's on my bed, I want to throw my... But if it's there on purpose, the entire garment, because of whatever's in there, has become a bosis and you therefore have a problem. You couldn't move that. If it was inadvertently placed there, which is more often than not the situation, in which you left money in the pocket, you left a pen in a pocket, you left whatever that you left in such a pocket. So, that goes back to the same status as we had before. Now the shirt does not become a bosis, because I didn't fulfill all the requirements necessary, I did not intentionally leave the muksa item in it. You just work all this through in your mind, which you've done already many, many times right here. So it's not a bosis, so the shirt itself is not muksa, but it has a muksa item in it. So the first thing you try to do is tilt it out. So if you can, tilt it off, push it out from the inside, whatever you need to do without moving the muksa item itself with your hands, you do. And then the entirety of the garment is totally fine. You can do with it whatever you want. If you are unable to move it out, so then you just move it with the muksa item in it without directly touching the muksa, because your shirt has again not become a bosis if it wasn't placed there intentionally, and the muksa item can't ruin it. But that's all the type of pocket that if you did put it there intentionally, it would create a bosis. In a situation in which you didn't, you just found, oh, I left this here, I didn't mean for it to be here, then if it's unintentional, so then you have to either tilt it out if you can, or you just don't carry it directly by that, take it by, you know, that you can move it, because it's not a bosis.
So are you required by certain amount of space you're allowed to move to get that thing up here?
I did. The post can talk about that. The best thing to do would be to do it as quickly as you can. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, what about the other types of pockets? The other types of pockets are considered a distinct unit. It's a separate garment. It's sewn on only from the top and it sort of hangs from the garment. So, the halakha looks at those as considered a non-primary part of the garment. It's not just a one big part. It's a separate thing. And because it's a non-primary part of the garment, it can never render such a garment a basis. Meaning, let's say I'm a regular men's pants pocket. So I left my wallet, which I normally keep in my pants pocket. So I take my pants off before Shabbos. I put them on the bed, get ready for Shabbos in the last minute rush. I come home Friday night, and my pants are sitting on my bed. Now, my wallet and the pants, we can debate. Let's assume that's where I usually keep it. All right, sometimes at night I take it out, sometimes it stays in, I get it out the next morning. That's where it's left. So let's assume that that's considered a basis because it's certainly possible it wasn't, that's where I leave it. But the pants, do the pants become a basis now because of the wallet, which are in my pocket, in my pants, on my bed? How far is this wallet going to create a basis? So the pocket itself, the actual piece of cloth sewn on, for sure becomes a basis. That's a separate entity. A little pocket, that's the basis. Alright, but that's, we don't care so much about that because I care about the bigger section of the pair of pants. What's the status of that? So the halacha says in such a type of pocket, you can't make a basis. It's too insignificant a part of the garment to establish the status of the entirety of the garment. So that the basis is the pocket itself, but the pants, which are carrying the pants pocket, do not become a basis because it's just too insignificant an area to establish the entirety of the pants to be nigra to follow after the status of the pocket. Yeah. So halacha is like this. Number three, it's preferable to shake out the muksa before moving it. Preferable, because technically speaking, what's that?
But it's on the bed. You can't do that because you still need your bed.
No, but you could pick up the pan, meaning that you pick up the pan, so you should try to shake it out, right? If it landed on your bed, it wouldn't help either, but onto the floor, wherever. That's preferable. Now, I say preferable, so the Mishnah Berurah writes, because it is only preferable, because again, when you work it through, technically speaking, my pair of pants themselves did not become a basis. They cannot become a basis from the pair of pants pockets in that type of pocket, even if it was left there intentionally. So therefore, I can move it. I'm moving my pants. If it happens to move also, it's fine. It's an indirect movement. I'm moving it for the sake of the pants. Preferable, the preferable way to do it is to be able to shake it out. Now, if you wanted to wear it, then you're required to take it out. And that is a specific reason. That is only because we are afraid that you will eventually end up carrying it outside.
That assume there's no error.
Excellent. And this is where, let's just summarize what we have here. And we'll take over to start a couple again. So that's what the halacha says. The halacha says as follows. If it's a, let's take a coat pocket. Anyone have you're wearing a shirt. What kind of jacket do you have? What kind of pocket do you have in your coat?
It's acting all pull out.
Okay, so you walk Friday night, you go to the coat room, you want to take home your coat, and lo and behold, you found your left your wallet in your coat. Pen in the coat pocket. So now what do? So you say, okay, what kind of pocket do I have? So if it's a pocket that's sewn in on the three sides, that's considered part of your jacket. You say, okay, well now that's a problem. That means the jacket could become a basis for the item that's in it. So the first question is, well, is it considered an intentional placement or an inadvertent placement? So most of the time, well, not necessarily most of the time, depending on what the item is, if it's a pen, unless you always carry that pen in your pocket, some people do that, they always want to have a pen on them. So if that's the place where you leave your pen, so then your coat would have become a basis, and your coat's not muksa, you have a problem on Shabbos. Even if you get the pen out, your jacket cannot be used on Shabbos if you put it there on purpose.
If it's the pocket that comes out?
If it's a pocket that's attached on the three sides, right.
What's the tree thing outside? You need something to wear? Could there be a sakana then? Would it be leaning for that reason?
If it's a case of a pen, this is a great question, I'll tell you why. If that happened, and it's a pen in there, I would be lenient on you. Why would I be lenient? Because if you remember last week... No, that's not why I'd be lenient. I would be lenient because if you remember, what type of muksa is a pen? Kishim lach toliyaser, the type of pen that's only forbidden because it has forbidden usages. And that's the most lenient type of mukta, that even if I need to place or I need it for its permitted use, I can move it itself. So we mentioned there's a machlokas amongst the poskim whether or not there's such a concept of a bustus at all on a kishim lach toliyaser. Maybe it's such a weak type of mukta, evidenced by the fact that you can move it itself whenever you need it, or its place. Maybe there's no concept of bustus at all. So generally it would be machmir, we'd say treat it like it's a bustus. But if you had a situation like that where this is a coat and it's a 30 degree Friday night, and the only reason why your coat became a bustus is because of a klisha malach tola iser, there'd be room to be lenient. Because there are many significant poskim. The more significant, and there's a hierarchy in poskim, there's like the machlokas between the Prima Gadon and the Aruch HaShulchan. The Prima Gadon is considered bigger, so to speak, in this regard. So we'll be machmir, so we sometimes do that in halacha, but if you needed to rely on a leniency, he's a big enough player that you would certainly do that. So in that situation, I would say, fine. But if the item that was in your coat was a wallet that you would purposely place there, I don't know, you'd have to send somebody home and get you bring you back a coat. And really, that would be a lot more difficult. Depending on how much of a sakana, obviously a real sakana, there's nothing else available, it's only, but that would be the process. But let's say you inadvertently, let's say the pen or the wallet was there inadvertently. Oh, I forgot to take it out. Now it's Friday night, I'm in shul, and I have my wallet. It's in my coat pocket, but I didn't need to leave it there. And it's totally inadvertently, just ended up there. So does my coat become a bustus?
No.
Certainly not. No matter what kind of pocket you have, if you didn't intend to put it there, the coat doesn't become a bustus. So your coat's a mukta, you're allowed to use your coat. But I have a problem. I have a muksa item in my coat. So, do I want to wear it or just move it? Is this like the example of my pants on my bed, or I want to wear it? So I want to wear it. If I just want to move it, it's the situation of the pants on my bed. All right, it's preferable to shake it out, but if for whatever reason I can't, then you can just move it as it is. But I want to wear this. So the halacha says the reason why you need to shake it out before you wear it is because you're going to come to carry it. So I spoke to my parents, so what about if you live in a place with an eruv? Because halacha doesn't, it's not a muksa issue that says if it's a bosis, if it's a non-bosis, meaning like the coat did not become a bosis, and I want to wear it. The halacha, it's not because of Hilchos muksa that says you're not allowed to wear it. It's muksa. No, you're allowed to. Because I'm not carrying it directly. I need it for the coat. The only reason why the halacha says I need to take it out is because I don't have to carry it. But if there's an eruv, so it wasn't written anywhere that we found, but in Svara, there's in regular logical deductions based on the halacha, it should be fine without having to shake it out. So if you find your wallet in your coat pocket, which you inadvertently left there without meaning to leave there, you should be allowed to wear it home on Shabbos with it in your coat pocket. Oh, so then you could say that. Now, so maybe you put your hand, you're going to end up touching it and moving it directly. That's fair. And that's a logical decree, but that's not stated. The reason isn't, the Shulchan Aruch does not write that the reason why you must take it out is because you're eventually going to put your hands in your pockets. He writes, it's because you're going to end up carrying it outside. You're going to forget, you're going to move outside with it while you're wearing it. So it's very logical what you're saying, but I don't know that I need to be more stringent on you than what the halacha says, and it wasn't said that way. So ideally, if whatever's in your pocket you could shake out, that's always the ideal. So if it's only a pen, or it's a dollar bill, or $5 bill even, alright, maybe that'd be better to go into a corner and hope that it'll be there after Shabbos. Here's your wallet. I'm going to leave it in jail, I kick it off into a corner. I can't do that. Well, then it'd be fine to go home with it. Because, and you're just working through and always become why you're doing that, because since the wallet was placed inadvertently in the coat, assuming that's the situation, so then it doesn't become a bustus, and I'm moving my coat, which is mutter. And even if you put it there that's not the right word, alright? Intentionally, that didn't sound right at all. Even if you put it there intentionally, if it's the type of pocket, like the men's suit pants, then that still won't make it into a bustus, because that's not the type of pocket. It's its own little entity, it's not part of the shirt like a shirt pocket. And even then, you still could wear your coat home with your item in your pocket if you need to.
So what about the point for you? You're required to move it for wellness. So when does that apply?
That was if you don't have an heir, for fear of carrying it. That's why I wrote specifically for fear of carrying it outside. So when I spoke to the parent, I said, well, what happens if there's an heir? So he said it. It's hard to hear that we should be bound by a halacha which is concerned about a place with no heir when you live in a place with an heir. You have to say something like, yeah, because we're afraid you one time will end up in that kind of place and you'll forget that this is what you did of it. Hard to say that. Yeah.
So based on that, let's say you're walking to Shul and you find realize there's money in there.
So same thing, you know, let's work that through. Same thing. In other words, if I got money in there, is my code of office for the money? So how'd the money end up there? Did you? I left it there. If I would have known before, I sure would have taken it, right? So that means, that regardless of the type of pocket it is, you never can have the bosses in that situation.
Right. In other words, it wouldn't be preferable to...
So preferable is to dump it out. That's always the preference. Whenever we're moving muksa, the preference is try not to have to do that. Tilt it off to the side. Right. It's going to cause you a financial loss if it's a couple of pennies. So if it's not such a big deal, then go right ahead. If Yaakov went back for Pachim Ketanim. Every cent that he had was valuable to him. So if you don't want to lose the money, so it's fine. Believe it or not. Right. Or just be more careful not to purposely put things in pockets.
Could you walk all the way over for kids?
Yeah.
Well, you have to learn that on one side. Clean that stuff out from every window. You have a wallet in it.
I mean, you make that intentional.
Yeah, Martha, who's going to know you have a wallet in your pocket? Yeah, but he's telling you it's fine. You don't need to fool him. He's not concerned. Okay, now, the last number five there, I just want to stress, because that's what Mr. Skrovsky was saying, the pocket itself for sure becomes a buses. We're talking, remember, a couple levels removed. There's a wallet in a pocket in the coat. So the pocket can't affect the status of the coat, but the wallet for sure will affect the status of the pocket in the case, and if it was there on purpose. I mean, if it was inadvertent, then it's never going to affect the pocket. But if you did leave it there on purpose, and it's the type of a pocket which is not going to affect the coat, so then the pocket would become a problem, but not the coat, depending on... Meaning you can't use your pocket for others, and you shouldn't put other things in the pocket. That pocket becomes a bucket.
Can you
then use the pocket? No, because once it's a bus. The only time dumping things out helps is if it wasn't that way before Shabbos. It became muksa on Shabbos, so then you can get rid of it. But if a bus is a bus, the whole Shabbos.
You have to
agree
when it's not in there, but you can't understand that.
Right.
So I'll give my pocket. So if I want to dump out whatever is in it, rather than let some change in there,
right.
I have to shake the coat this way. I can't push the pocket.
No, well, because most likely the pocket's not really, in most actual cases, you didn't put the money there on purpose, which means it's not really a busis. Right, that's why, the whole reason why you're doing that is because the pocket didn't really, oh my goodness, when you're ever, you're surprised like that, you didn't want it there, it ended up there for whatever reason. Therefore, it doesn't become a busis.
Yeah,
that's within the case of where you put it there on purpose and it did become a busis. We're working within the situation where it did become a buses.
It's just a trend that when people do something, we just learned this. Possibly we goofed up a little bit here. Did you still talk afterwards as a forgiveness? What do you do here?
What do you do when you went away? Roll in the snow. 10 times.
I mean, do people know when you
it's the one it's giving to Zaki. They want Stokas Hatzel Mimavis. The Pasuk says, I think it's in Mishlei, I'm not sure exactly where. They giving charity saves from death, so to speak. It's a wonderful, it's always a good thing. It's one of those mitzvahs that's used as a wonderful protector of many things. I would highly recommend any time to find a cause that's worthy in your eyes. Okay, drawers. We are not going to get to the last thing, but let's keep moving. Let's try our best. Drawers. Same discussion. Okay, two parts of the discussion. One is the status of the drawer itself, and then you have its effect on the desk as a whole. So I have lots of items in a drawer. The drawer is part of a bigger desk. I don't know if I can move the desk. Now, the big, obviously, built-in desk, you're not going to move them anyway, but sometimes you have smaller areas which you might want to move around in the dining room because you're rearranging for whatever you're doing. Can I move it when I got lots of stuff in the drawer? So, working it through. Regarding number one, regarding the drawer itself, So that will definitely become a basis to the muktzah, assuming you put it there again. Always, if you put, this is where you leave your cell phone over the weekend. You put it in here. This is where you leave money. This is where you leave calculators. This is where you leave whatever. So then the drawer will become a basis. The drawer is more often very different than pockets. Pockets, things end up in by accident. Most of the time, most of the issues with our pockets are going to be fine because if I would remember before Shabbos, I would have taken it out. But drawers, this is where you keep stuff. So the drawer will more often than not become a basis, and that will be the basis to the mikvah, muktzah items, and therefore cannot be opened or moved. Now, all this is only provided the qualifications for basis were fulfilled, which means that not only that it was there on purpose, which very often you will have, but more importantly than that, there is nothing else in the drawer of greater value in Hilchos Shabbos. So if you do have a drawer which is designated for lots of muktzah items, then yes, that drawer will become entirely muktzah. But if you do have things in there which you will need, it will not be. But you need to know what's in there before you open up the drawer, because otherwise the drawer is muktzah. You want to just play games opening it up and not really knowing. But just in terms of the theory, the principle of it is, like everything else that we've seen, you know, the drawer now is a container of a muktzah item and a non-muktzah item. Whichever one is more important, either because you need it on Shabbos or it's more valuable, will carry the day. But if it's not more valuable, then the drawer will in fact become a basis, and therefore the whole drawer is muktzah, and you can't open and close the drawer.
Can I ask you a question there? I mean, let's say you have a drawer. So can you plan to leave in there things that are muktzah and things you can
100%. That's what we discussed last week about leaving a challah on the table.
No, but I mean, as a regular drawer, I mean, should you try to arrange it so it's only muktzah?
Yeah,
you can. Or once you know, well, that's the one line
here. Up to you. That's not a halakhic question. If you want to be able to open up your drawer, then yeah, make sure you put something in there regularly that's needed on Shabbos and more valuable. That is the advice we gave last week, that if you know you need to move your dining room table around because you're rearranging, you're hosting lunch, more people, less people, shasros, whatever, and you want to move your dining room table, how do I move it if I have my lachter on it? So again, my lachter, the tray, that whole thing is going to become muktzah. Well, will it affect my whole table? Yes, unless there's something of greater value on the table, which will then, once the candles go out, allow you to move the entire table to another room, as long as you did that before, and you can do that on purpose before Shabbos, it's totally fine. It's often suggested to do that, so that you can move your table if you need to move it. Otherwise, the whole table becomes the buses. Okay. 2, when the drawer does become the buses, then we have another discussion regarding the desk, because now the desk is containing the basis. So here you have 2 different types of drawers, which is going to be similar but different than the 2 types of pockets. You have the irremovable drawers and your removable drawers. If they are irremovable, they don't come out. Filing cabinets, other types of either toy drawers, not so fancy type of drawers in which they don't come out, then that is like our pocket, like the men's pants pocket. It is part of the desk, but it's an insignificant part of the desk. It cannot create the status of a whole desk just because of a little drawer. I want to know about moving the whole top of the desk. I have a little drawer that has some muktzah items in it. That's not going to affect the whole status because it's just not a primary enough part of the desk. And therefore, the desk couldn't be moved, but the drawer itself would be a basis. So if you had a filing cabinet you wanted to move on Shabbos, and in one of the drawers of the filing cabinet is a muktzah item, that drawer becomes a basis and could not be directly opened or closed, but the entirety of the filing cabinet can be picked up and moved because that one drawer is not significant enough as to affect the entirety of the whole desk. If, however, they are removable drawers, then that is considered a separate utensil supported by the desk. So it's totally not attached. The drawer is a separate item. It's not attached in any way to the drawer, just because I happen to have it clicked in right now, but it can come out, it can go in. So now what I have a camera in a drawer, the drawer is in a desk. How far do we take the status of the muktzah? So we go through the regular rules. Well, did the camera make the drawer into a basis? Absolutely. Did the drawer make the desk into a basis? Well, it depends. What else is the desk holding? Is it holding any other items that would be permissible? You clearly left it there on purpose, right? The drawer was definitely left on purpose in the desk. That's its place. So you ask the regular questions. If there is a non-muktzah item that is more chashuv, even if it's in another drawer or on top of the desk, either way, the desk is now holding 2 items, the one which is permitted, one which is forbidden. whichever one is more conscious will establish the status of the desk. So if you have a desk with a couple of drawers and you want to move it on Shabbos, and they're removable drawers, so you go through the process in your head. Say, well, the muksa item in the drawer itself, how many different items are in the drawer itself, muksa or non-muksa, what's more important? So if it's less than, if the mutter items are more important, then the whole drawer is fine. You can move the drawer because the drawer does not become a basis. If the drawer does become a basis, then you want to ask, well, can I move the whole desk? So, are there other things on the desk? Very often there are, but if they have to be more valuable, then you can move the desk, otherwise the entire desk becomes a basis and you couldn't move the whole desk. And that's just playing out the principles that we've gone through. Clear? Hopefully, yes. Okay, I'm running because we need to do this before we finish. Indirect movement.
Another drawer that has something in it that you want, not the drawer that has the muksa item.
That would depend on whether or not... Right. That would be fine. Yes. Yeah. You want to move what you're moving? What are you moving? Yeah.
I have my camera in it, but it has my brush that I want to use.
Yeah. Correct. The camera remains muksa, but not the drawer, because the drawer has something else in it. Okay. Indirect movement of muksa. Now we've been talking about is when things are muksa, but there are some major exceptions in which we're allowed to move again. Where it's established as muksa. It's either a klishim lachtel isser, it's a klishim muksa machmas gufa, it's inherently muksa, it's machmas pisar, kis financial loss, whatever the reason is, there are certain circumstances in which you can move them indirectly. Meaning, the sage is only prohibited using your hands, picking up in the normal way, and moving an item. But if you move them indirectly, either that I take a permissible item, I take a fork, which is a utensil that I'm allowed to use, I'm allowed to push that and move my muksa item with my fork because I'm indirectly moving it. Or I'm moving the item underneath it so that I'm moving my notebook with the tape recorder on top of it because I'm not directly moving the muksa. Under certain circumstances, those are permissible. When are those circumstances? A, most importantly, it is not for the benefit of the muksa. Meaning, letter I there. You have a different. Sometimes you left money on a chair inside the house, and you have money on the chair outside the house. So the money on the chair outside the house, so you say, boy, that's not really a good idea. I left my pocketbook outside. I was playing, whatever. I want to get that inside. So you say, well, it's not a problem, because since I didn't purposely leave my pocketbook outside, it only was because I was talking on the phone on the way in the house, and I couldn't get my keys out, so I just dropped my pocketbook on the chair. I ran inside. I also lit candles, and ay vey, my pocketbook is sitting on the chair in the front yard. So you say, okay. Pocketbook has my wallet, it has my cell phone, the pocketbook is definitely a buses. Fine. What about the chair? Is the chair a buses to the pocketbook?
No.
Great. So let me pick up the chair, and I'll move the whole chair in, because the chair is not a buses to the pocketbook. So we say, no. You could only do that if you need a chair. You could indirectly move muksa for the sake of the chair, but for the sake of the muksa, moving it indirectly doesn't work. But if the pocketbook was left on the dining room chair, and it's in your way, I don't want a pocketbook in my dining room. So I can move the muksa indirectly by just picking up the whole chair. Am I moving this for the sake of the pocketbook? I'm not doing it for the sake of the pocketbook, I'm doing it for my sake. I want to have a dining room without my pocketbook in it, without my wallet, without my hammer. So in a situation in which it's not a buses, so that the item underneath can be moved, and you're not doing it for the sake of the muksa, you're doing it for some other reason, you're allowed to move it because it's entirely inadvertent, because it's not a direct movement of the muksa.
Leaving your pocketbook outside, Jonathan taking it
into
your house. What do you do with that? That's
problematic. Yeah, but you're still moving it for the sake of the pocketbook.
But what do? You give your credit cards and then you have the keys to the house there.
How do you find a heter for that? I'm not sure how you find a heter for that.
Yeah. By the way, my pocketbook is sitting on
yes.
Maybe you have to find something and throw it over it.
Yeah. All right, but just to carry the pocketbook, for sure you can't do it because that's the buses. Even to move the chair, you'd have to really come up with a real creative way why you need the chair that it's on. Which means figuring out a way why you need every other chair in your house. I now need this chair. Because to bypass the chair that's available, to say that you need that chair doesn't work. But if you came up with that, then you needed it inside, but you'd have to really work that out. Okay. B. You can pull a permitted toy or anything else that's permitted out of a bin, which will cause the mitzvah toys to move. Happens all the time. Again, it's an inadvertent movement. I want that which is permitted, but I see the way that it's situated, their mitzvah toys, they're going to move around. That's fine. Now, it's different than setting off electrical toys that are going to make, that's a different, I'm not talking about that. That's, if you know that that's going to happen, that's a separate problem. I'm just talking about where you know there are mukzah toys around, or there are other mukzah items, and when I take out that which I want, they're going to move. That's totally fine. I'm allowed to pull out that which I need, even though other mukzah items will be moving as a result. Is that the case? The Gemara discusses is pulling something out of the sand, where when you pull it out of the sand, they used to keep things in the sand all the time, either keep them warm or cool, depending on the time of year it was. The sand's going to move. Sand is mukzah. Mukzah machmas goofy, you can't do anything with it. When you pull it out, it doesn't matter, because I'm not directly moving the sand, I'm moving that which I'm allowed to move, and if things, you know, crumble on top of it, but that's not talking about, you know, it's going to make noise, that's going to be a different problem. That's not just a mukzah problem, that's a separate Hilchos Shabbos problem. So similarly, you have in C, you're moving a tablecloth to get rid of the nutshells to use the table space. I want my tables. I have shells on top. The shells are mukzah. Now we discussed, if the shells are so bad that they fit into the category of graf shel re'i, where it's a little bit disgusting or inappropriate, where you'd be embarrassed for somebody to walk in, then you anyway can move them away. But let's say it's not so bad. There's just a couple of them there. You're not expecting anyone. It's fine. But you want to use your table again for something. So you can't pick up the shells, because the shells are mukzah. But you could pick up the tablecloth or the plate underneath it, because you're not directly moving that which is mukzah, and you can get rid of it that way because you are indirectly moving. Right.
You can dump them out?
Yeah.
Why the nut shells mukzah? You can handle
them open. After you've eaten the nut.
Oh, it's all gone
in there? Yeah, just the nut, just the shells.
What about taking haircloth and shaking cloth?
Well, outside, is, I think, is a separate issue of shaking them outside, but if you want to shake them into garbage, is fine. In other words, well, the crumbs aren't mukzah, so that's a food item. You could.
They're going to come up and get the vodka
to do
that?
No. So, no, so that assumes that the table, the halacha is that a tablecloth generally is not assumed to become a basis. In other words, we said that a table will become the basis for whatever's on top of it. It'll become the basis for your lachter, becomes the basis for anything else that was purposely left on the table. The tablecloth, the lacha does not recognize it, because that's not purposely holding up the item. Just, I happen to have a tablecloth on my table, so therefore you could pick up the whole tablecloth and shake out the stuff. So Rabbana brings an example of money left in a candy dish, or sometimes you have the candy dishes around, someone drops the coin in there, yeah, whatever, even if there's something in there. So it doesn't become a basis if it wasn't there on purpose. So the candy dish is fine. You're allowed to move that around, even though there are mukzah items in it. That is totally fine. Two last quick things. I know that Prince is waiting outside. I'm almost done. Carrying a child who's holding mukzah. This is a big one. What happens? You have a child, a young child. You're in the air. You can carry the child, but the child's holding something mukzah. So the halacha says as follows: if the child is not holding something valuable, let's skip to number two first. If it's something very valuable that the child's holding money, so then the halacha says you can't carry the child for a non-muksa reason, because we're afraid the child's going to eventually drop whatever it is that he's carrying, and because it's valuable, you're going to want to pick it up. So out of a fear that you're eventually yourself going to end up carrying the muksa item, if what the child is holding is muksa, but it's a valuable muksa that the child is holding, then you can't carry the child. Child has, you know, a $20 bill in his hand. You can't carry that child down because he's going to drop the $20, and you're going to want to pick up the money. So then you couldn't carry the child. But let's say the child is carrying a mukzah toy. You don't care about the toy, but he's carrying a mukzah toy. You brought it to shul. You want to bring him home. He's at a friend's house. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says you are allowed to carry the child. The Mishnah says that you're allowed to carry the child, provided that the child is of an age where he's totally dependent on you, and you couldn't just leave him and leave him. You couldn't. He's a 3-year-old. You can just walk away without him. So under those circumstances, that you need to go, you can't leave the child. He's too young for that. Meaning the difference between a 7-year-old who's misbehaving and you say it's time to, so you can't pick him up, he needs to drop the mukzah toy. But if it's a 3-year-old you got to go with, and they're holding a mukzah toy, you're allowed to carry that child, carrying that toy, because even if he drops it, you're not going to care about that, and you're indirectly carrying the mukzah. That's that. Last thing, and hopefully we'll go over this because we did the last things very, very quickly, using your body in an unusual way, using your elbow, using your feet, kicking things. So there's a big machlokes. It's a big machlokes in the poskim. Mishnah Brura concludes that it should be mutter, and he's so lenient that you can even do that for the sake of the muksa. Meaning we said in the case of the pocketbook on the chair outside, you can't take your chair into the house because you're doing that for the sake of the muksa. But if you were to use your leg and wrap your foot around the straps, you could carry it in because you're doing it tiltum in atzad, it's referred to as. Not, and since that's not considered, so there are those poskim who say that you could even do that for the sake of the muksa item. Others are machmer the Chazon Ish, and others are machmer to the exact opposite. So basically, using your body is the same as anything else. You can't even use your body, it's as if you're carrying it with your hands. So under no circumstances can you move anything with your body. So to the two extremes about using elbows for muksa on Shabbos, you have those who say it's totally fine even for the sake of the muksa, those who say it's just as bad as using your hands. So Rav Moshe concludes, Rav Moshe holds, it's better to be strict and not move muksa around with your body parts, in deference to those opinion who say that you should not. But if there's a financial loss involved, it's of great importance, so you can rely. And Mishnah Berurah himself says that it's fine. And someone told me a story recently that they were in, I forgot who it was, that they were in Bnei Brak. I think it was Rav Reisman, was in Bnei Brak for Shabbos, and there was something on the table on the muksa, so that was left there on Shabbos, and he said, no problem. He picked it up with his elbows, and everybody jumped and screamed, and he said, Mishnah Berurah says it's fine. And he said, yeah, but we're living in Bnei Brak. The Chazon Ish said, you're not allowed to do that. The Chazon Ish holds using your body parts doesn't help you at all. So generally, Moshe says it should be machmir not to do it, but if you need to, for financial loss or for other great reasons, you can rely on such posting like the Mishnah Berurah, who rely on for everything, and you can do that. So we ran through this at the end. I hope that was all clear. Listen to the tape for Chazara purposes, or Kansky, I'm sorry. And after this, okay. 2 weeks off. And then Rabbi Stein is going to be giving a series on kashrus in the kitchen. And then after that, we'll figure it out. But that's already, I'm not, can't figure it out. That's already 6 weeks from now.